Wednesday, May 2nd, water and environment committee meeting, there's room E.
Okay.
Thank you.
Top water and environment committee will come to order. Morning, everyone. We're going to start with 3536, because we have people who have other commitments. And we'll be moving 3558 over to Friday for anybody here on that bill. So I'm going to open a hearing on Bill 3536, have the staff read the summary.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3536 removes the ability to assert privilege for environmental audit reports within a criminal investigation or proceeding.
Thank you. Call forward Don Ledger and Don Higginson.
Right, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. I'm John Leitzer with Associated Oregon Industry. And I also have with me Don Higginson, who is a partner with Cable Houston, Benedict Higginson and Lloyd, who's been working on this project with DEQ and AOR for some time. This is a bill that deals with environmental audits. Just very briefly, environmental audit is a self-inspection that companies do if they're in compliance with environmental rules and laws. And they may do the self-inspection themselves, and they may hire a contractor to do it. And usually they put the results in a report that's all compiled. And they do it to make sure they're in compliance, they do it to reduce their liability, and also by doing this type of analysis, it also helps them determine how well their operations are working, control emissions, quite a lot about what's going on inside the plant. Environmental audits are often done at the requirement of DEQ, and that is within the permit schedule, do self-audit. And those are always made available to DEQ. It might be sent in, and it might just be held on premises inspection. But a lot of companies do extra audits because they want to find out if they're compliant. And under the Environmental Audit Privilege Act, they can hold the results of these audits, the ones that are not required to do it, the extra ones, as privileged information. And that's the attorney-client privilege. And the reason this was done, the reason the bill was passed, the act was passed, was to encourage companies to go out and self-audit as much as possible, find problems and correct them. When they do find problems, in order to retain the privilege, they do have to correct them. One of the issues that has come up, especially with EPA, is the issue about holding information privilege when it's a civil violation versus a criminal violation. And that has caused some problems with DEQ getting allegations about system programs or building hazardous waste. And so what we would like to do is for DEQ to help EPA, to help us get some allegations with DEQ, to limit the audit privilege, information privilege only for criminal cases, not criminal cases. And that will free up the allegations of the program that we have in the government throughout the country. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
It's important for us to develop individual solutions. Thank you.
The situation would be where a person knew, the easiest example, if they knew that there was a requirement that they had to have a permit before they would discharge wastewater into a stream, for example. And so that the Department of Environmental Quality could regulate that discharge and ensure that it wouldn't have an adverse impact on the stream. And that person didn't obtain the permit and intentionally discharged in order to avoid, say, for example, the cost that would be associated with the permit or in order to avoid the controls that would be associated with having a permit. And under Oregon, environmental statutes, that person would be susceptible to being charged with an environmental crime, subject to potential imprisonment, subject to potential fine.
That would be considered a criminal a violation then. What if someone died because of the discharge in the
Representative Mona Sanderson, again, there would be the crime because they were intentionally discharging, and that it would potentially aggravate the penalties or the person that person could be subject to. There also could be civil action brought against that person for the discharge if it caused damage to a person or property. The person who was damaged or the property was damaged could also have a civil remedy.
I was wondering if it was really egregious, like someone did die, then basically they could.
Thank you.
Parents or no one could sue or no, that wouldn't be it either. I'm just trying to see if they would be held liable.
Chair Close, Representative Mona Sanderson, yes, they would. And this bill would still retain the privilege for civil proceedings, but one of the key components of the privilege that John mentioned is that any violation you discover through a voluntary audit has to be promptly and diligently corrected. So if you don't do that, you immediately lose the privilege. So once you do this audit, and the idea is you discover that there's something that's not in compliance with the law and you immediately correct it. And if you don't do that, then you lose the privilege and the audit report would be available for any use at all.
Can I ask you, Mr. Hanson, the way current law is, can this information not even be subpoenaed?
Chair Close, under current law, it can. And there is a process that if it were a criminal proceeding, I think what you're asking about, there is a process for an in-camera inspection by a judge and the determination of whether the report is necessary for the criminal proceeding, whether the privilege has been waived, whether it's information that can't be gained in any other way. So there is a mechanism now for an audit report to be obtained in a criminal proceeding. But it's a more arduous process and that's where EPA has in particular said that restricts Oregon's enforcement authority for criminal activities and therefore impinges on the ability of EPA to delegate these state programs to Oregon.
This bill is about local control.
What I'm interested in is explaining a little bit more international relations. What we are getting back in exchange for giving this ability. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
The drafting of international trade agreements seems to put the profitability of foreign companies above the concerns of American citizens. That form of government in this country says that most of the rights and most of the decision-making power is held locally by the citizens, not by the federal government, and certainly not by any international quasi government trade agreement. What this memorial says is that we, the legislators of the country, and indeed we as citizens of the individual states, want to be informed about how our rights may be protected by international trade agreements. And it says that we should have a say about it. Mr. Chairman, I know that there are a lot of things that people disagree about in this building. But I think this is something that we can all agree on.
So we are having quite
we should all be able to agree when it comes to standing up to the rights of Oregonians to make their own decisions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
we much prefer at the station.
Okay, I've got five other people signed up.
It's not that I don't have a high degree of trust in the EPA, but what guarantees do we have that we'll get control of these programs if this legislation is passed?
Representative Morgan, we have a letter from EPA saying the statute is the town.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's my understanding that other states have had to do the same process, and this is not out of the ordinary. Is that correct?
Madam Chairman, Representative Lee, that's true. Oregon passed the first Audit Privilege Act. Ours is actually quite mild and limited compared to some of the ones that were passed. Some of those have been rolled back almost completely. Ours is the limitation on this one as well.
My name is Mike Burrell. I'm the director of the
Commission
of the Oregon Department of Economic and Community Development.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Let's call Neil Mullane.
Look at the memorandum. One of the basic tenets of this memorandum is that federal officials have not consulted with state and local elected officials.
Good morning. I'm Sheriff, members of the committee. John gave probably everything out for the record. My name is Neil Mullane. I'm the deputy director for DPCU. And I'm going to be here to talk to you a little bit about the department supports this bill, and John has mentioned a lot of the things that are covered in my testimony. We did pass the Audit Privilege in the country first, and other states followed, and as John has indicated, their privileges were much more significant. EPA had a lot of difficulties with those audit privileges and nationally has moved to go around each of the states and request those privileges to be removed. And the bill that we have before you today takes care of the situation that we have discussed with EPA, and specifically the sanctions of the privilege of the criminal activity. There was a question asked earlier about the privilege itself, I think, in terms of whether or not this is what would happen. And I guess that was the concern specifically of EPA. In terms of us having the privilege of criminal activity, is that it would make it more difficult to get the information from a company, and removing that privilege makes it easier for people to obtain that information. I would just say that there is a venue support the bill and would answer any questions. I've attached to my testimony the letter that EPA has sent to the department in support of the bill on
unilateral, bilateral, multilateral trade
I move House Bill 3536 to the floor as a due pass recommendation. Director Flory moves House Bill 3536 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Let me take a step back if I might. I've been playing this role. It's not a huge role. Thank you. Since about November of 1998.
Mr. Anderson.
I was not involved in the process at that time. My involvement was
that answers the direct single point of contact.
Can you give one too?
I don't know that the U.S. was represented in the past or the data for the government.
We're opening a public hearing on House Bill 2049, and staff will read the summary. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. The original bill on House Bill 2049 creates the Interagency Wildlife Management Security Damage Management Coordinating Committee to evaluate, recommend, coordinate, and publicize measures for controlling damage caused by wildlife. We have a dash one course today. That requires the Director of Ag and for the FNW to jointly appoint a wildlife damage advisor to the council when you try to hear. And it talks about how they will function. We had a large fiscal on this bill originally, and you have the old original fiscal in the packet as well that inserted the new fiscal, which means there is no fiscal. And that was the goal of the work group that came up with these special amendments to the new fiscal. Okay, I'm going to recess the hearing on House Bill 2049 and move to the work session on House Bill 39 here in Texas. We have a letter this year. And would you come before us? Can we have an amendment? All right. Thanks for coming.
Off the track.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. I'm Randy Hunter. The original bill, required that OGS and because of the large fiscal involved and some other concerns, we developed, my office, and ODF developed the Act to amend them.
The first of these negotiations,
Representative Leonard, have you had the opportunity to get a fiscal on the
No, what we were attempting to do with ODFW was to listen to the
negotiations to raise these types of issues. I think that is certainly a conflict.
I believe line 16 addresses that it says,
by the National Beverage Association and the National Council of State Legislature. Within the National,
for myself, was To a large degree, I own a boat. I have fishing equipment. But often when I have time in a day where I can go fish, I realize I don't have a good license. And for me to go get a license, I have to go to G.I. Joe's or someplace. It's actually quite a bit out of my way before I go fishing. And it's just enough of a hindrance that I don't go. On the other hand, I am a person that if I had a license once, and every time my license expired, I had a renewal notice in the mail that we get a lot of vehicles or RVs or whatever. I would routinely do is I just as I get a lot of careers, a lot of people I go to fish lots every day. And I hope that in the long term we find not only is it a customer friendly service for consumers, it would enhance the department's revenue. And you'll notice we've also included the ability to renew over the internet as part of the cap, as part of the trial of what I'm looking for.
Madam Chair, were you going to have Roy come up and speak to Representative Morgan's concerns about how much staff time this is going to take?
That's a good idea. We weren't sure that Roy was going to make it here, so I think he's early. Please come here.
My apologies. As Representative Leonard has testified to, for the record, Roy Ellinger, legislative coordinator for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. We have worked with Representative Leonard on these amendments. We're prepared to put together some kind of pilot program with existing staff resources. Our only caveat is on the mail aspect, that looks to be doable to us and not very expensive. Take a shot at that. What I was cautioned at by our information people is that when we're dealing with the World Wide Web, there can be very considerable cost involved on renewability and licensing there. So I can't say exactly in our pilot program how heavy it will be on the World Wide Web aspect, seeing that going in, you know, there's considerable expense there. But we're prepared to put together a pilot program with assisting staff resources and work with the task force and see what we can do this biennium, this upcoming biennium.
Just a ballpark guess as to how much staff time it's going to take to pilot and staff task force. I mean, Representative Morgan's concern was in existing resources, and if assuming that people already have full-time jobs and what they're doing, you know, how are they going to do this also?
Madam Chair, Representative Cruz, I don't have those exact numbers. Kate Brown put that all together in working with Representative Leonard's office. I can provide those to you probably by 11 o'clock this morning if you'd like, sir. But I just don't have them right at hand.
Go ahead, Representative Monica. Yes, I was just thinking, Madam Chair. I am curious regarding, does the department have a website?
Madam Chair, Representative Monahan, yes, we do.
And you can't have a link to something, I'm trying to figure out what the expense would be, a link to a registration area within the governmental system with your own database, or is that still expensive?
Madam Chair, Representative Monahan, I think, from my understanding, part of the issue is that we don't have programmers right now, that we have to contract someone with some consulting firm to do this renewability by the web. The second issue, I think, is somebody spends some on the security aspect, and somebody wants to use a credit card and send it, you know, through the computer. I think part of the considerable expense is designing a program to make sure that you have a secure site. Yeah. So I know those are two expenses right there I'm aware of.
every company in every nation should be product on equal footing.
Does the department have the ability to take credit cards at this time?
Consumers should have the information that they need and desire to make an informed choice.
Well, we certainly can't take more need on the internet. No.
Freedom to have the ability to exercise your judgment.
I don't know at the point of sale if we take credit cards for that or not. I have to double check before I give an answer.
Okay. A third principle is that non-infringement on local or national rules that treat a local or national environmental rule that treats products of all producers equally. There's a very important clause called Chapter 11 that has two components. First, that foreign investors are no more favorably or unfavorably treated than domestic producers. And this is very much in terms of what the first principle that I enunciated.
Eventually, one would think that all the agencies are going
to be able to deal with. Such as large apples and our competitors in the East and the North will only allow large apples to be sold. But we tend to sell products in glass jars or in plastic jars will only allow glass jars. So these are essentially designed not to protect the safety and welfare of our citizenry, but to discriminate in favor of one of the corporations in which we clearly are not foul to the principles of the law.
I'm not quite sure. I think the only pay, I believe, at this point, 50 cents per license for the handling of the paperwork and issuing the license. And I'm sure that most businesses, I don't probably involve a lot later. I don't believe the 50 cents an issue they're really making any money. Because you're coming into their business, I think that is why we haven't been pushed to increase that far more than 50 cents.
Domestic and foreign producers. And some of those cases that have come from that have been some that continue to raise our eyebrows. And I'm sure there'll be a first thing to come. One is where the Apple Corporation sues Canada because the nation during the years that Gasoline became MNT because of an inclusionary toxin that has long-term health consequences. There was an effort to get out of the Canadian environment, much as we're now working to reduce the role of mercury in the Oregon environment. Or methanol is suing the U.S. to overturn the California law and actually to keep an additive out of products that are getting into California drinking water. Very similar principle. There have been a number of other pieces related to step back to consumer information that I wanted to touch on. You may recall at one time we had cans of tuna that got in the turtle fish. And this was based on international rules that were set up to provide leases out of the trap that allowed you to catch tuna without ensuring dolphin or turtles, or at least not a chance to kill. Both of those groups, animal groups, are airborne. So if they were caught in the back of a net, meaning they drowned. And if it was necessary, they had a way to release it. They were sometimes lost in fish in the process. So you basically had an opportunity for entrepreneurs to say, I want to see dolphins and turtles, or give them a better chance of life, realizing a lease in trap. And you'll notice that those cans have disappeared. It was forming consumers.
Matt, your representation, you're quite correct. There's sports administration money too.
Yes, not only important because
in my mind, it wasn't a discriminatory.
It's not only important to sell the license as far as revenue is concerned. It's also important to sell the paraphernalia as far as the industry. But on the issue, if I may, Madam Chair, on the issue of the web, where I understand the possibility of some problems with the use of the credit cards and the possibility that the department doesn't want to get into that because you also may run something that costs you just X% to process the credit card. credit cards. But the use of the internet for purposes of application so that you could trigger the application of the department that will send out the necessary material for you to apply for a fishing license.
Well, this concern over genes is much stronger in Europe, and they would like to know when you
but I think that's one on the pilot project. My assumption is there might be some way to send some, for instance, people get licenses, and if they want to give us an email address, we might trigger a renewable, remind them to sign their new. That's, I think, certainly one aspect of the pilot project we'd be looking at.
You could have a lot of faith in a criminal justice system.
I would like to
see what arguments are brought out by the government side to see how they're weighed, and so we see what discussions in the process.
Some concern, I think, that it would require the state representative to bring this kind of an issue forward to us. Since I've been in this body, the Department of Fish and Wildlife has been searching constantly for ways to increase their revenues and
advocating for the state's position.
And I realize this is relatively new, and this is not in your jurisdiction. It seems like a little creativity of this type might be the thing that the department will continue to be looking forward to.
And I think in the long term, and it's something that America
part of the reason is that it's become so complicated to understand what the rules are that you almost have to have a law degree to be able to interpret the book. So that is another part of this problem.
I understand that, but as you...
monies that are returned from the sale of according to
the Department of Transportation is responsible for managing
restoration money
it's not only important the license as far as revenue is concerned, it's also important to sell the paraphernalia as far as industry is concerned. But on the issue, if I may, Madam Chair, on the issue of the web, where I understand the possibility of some problems with the use of the credit card and the possibility that the department doesn't want to get into that because you also may run something of that may cost you X% of the process of the credit card. But the use of the internet for purposes of application so that you could trigger the application that the department then would send out the necessary material for you to apply for a
recommended budget going into the 0103 budget is $1.8 billion.
I think that's one on the pilot project. My assumption is there might be some way to send some, for instance, people get licenses, and if they want to give us an email address, you might trigger a renewable, something to remind them to sign their new. That's, I think, certainly one aspect of the pilot project we'd be looking at.
I would like to the highway fund itself has three primary idea forward to us. I would, however, have some concern, I think, that it requires a state representative to bring this kind of issue forward to us. Since I've been in this body, the Department of Fish and Wildlife has been searching constantly for ways to increase their revenues and
But I would also point out I think you'll find it when you look at the decrease in licenses, part of the reason is that it becomes so complicated to understand what the rules are, that you almost have to have a law degree to be able to interpret the book. So that is another part of the problem.
I understand that it improves
the weight mile taxes generally increase when motor vehicle fuel taxes increase. In
5. We started an effort to simplify our regulations. We met with a number of angry people. Believe it or not, we could not get them to think about simplifying regulations because when it came to their particular body of water, the neighbor's spot they love to fish, they had all kinds of regulations that wanted to stay in place just for that spot, whether it's to keep others out or what. And so, as someone who has always felt that you have represented our hunting and fishing regulations should be simpler than they are. It has been amazing to me that when we met with Angry on this very issue and really wanted to make it go in, I think it's not possible, we could not. In the end, we threw up our hands and said, okay, they want the regulations this way. Without the fishing support and people really being, I feel the way you do. Our regulations are too complex.
In 1985, another two states.
It was just amazing to me that we did not get more support for that. Within the fishing community.
I think part of the problem there is you're dealing mostly with people that fish first and breed second.
Right.
But the impact has truly been on the casual, every one weekend and month of a fisherman who just gets a whim like a kind of winter and wants to go out and drop a line in the water. And you go looking on the South Coast and figure out where you can fish and what, you know. You either just go ahead and do what you're going to do, whether you're legal or not, or you just throw up your hand and say, I can't figure this out, so I guess I won't go fishing. And I think that's a lot of the impact on the number of licenses we're selling.
Primarily, that's probably attributed to the increase in
Madam Chair, wait, there's a bill coming to the floor. You'll be able to hear this information on the
stand. Fuel consumption for the next biennium.
Seeing none, we are in work session. We will entertain a motion.
Madam Chair.
Madam Johnson.
I would move the House Bill 3099
and the House Bill 3099. Is there discussion?
Okay, this slide is capable of projecting force of amendments to a half billion.
Having put together
ideas for 98% of all transportation revenue.
I know the governor
Okay, we're going back to the hearing on House Bill 2410. And I hope you all remember the summary.
Then that it's increasing slightly faster than the population increases, so more people are getting licensed and vehicles than moving into the state. And this chart shows that vehicle miles traveled is increasing at a steady rate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had a work group that took this issue under consideration. And as you can see from the folks who attended, we have the appropriate agents, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife, as well as several interest groups. They came to agreement on what you see as the Dash-1 Amendment. Dash-1 Amendment before you, which sets up an advisory task force that would work with the agency, meeting only semi-annually so that there would be no fiscal impact, to look at this issue and come up with a plan to present to the next legislative session. The bill would be repealed January of 2004.
Okay, and Department of Transportation, we talked about it's responsible for managing the transportation.
Try to answer any questions. Basically, the amendment asks the directors of Fish and Wildlife and Agriculture to make these appointments, and the work group was comfortable that the designated participants did not need to be named in the legislature, but could be chosen by the director. They well know who is interested in this area and would be included in their selection.
Planning, emergency relief, preservation, modernization, safety, social
programs,
and
In the legislation itself on the bill, page 1, we take out state and local agencies and we replace that with a broad range of people that would need to be involved, federal, state, county, and local governments, so that it would be thoroughly inclusive. And then the rest of the bill is deleted. And the new section 2 allows the directors of the two agencies, Fish and Wildlife and Agriculture, to appoint a working group, and they will only meet semi-annually. There will be no compensation for the members. The idea is that the agencies and the work group members would use their own time, because this is such a critical issue to them, to try to find some resolution to the issue. As you remember,
remember the fiscal originally very considerable amount, and the current fiscal impact has a zero designated. As a result of these meetings, and the work group would try to bring back a proposal to the next legislative session outlining some kind of a plan, and perhaps at that time there might even be funding available for some kind of plan. And the entire thing will sunset January 2004.
We were saying we have a very comprehensive report, and getting everybody together looks like we
did. Everyone was very cooperative. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I have a question. Thank you. I had a scathing email, and I just want for the record that for you to make a
moving to the next
comment, because I think the amendment takes care of what their conclusion was. They said their basic concern is there is no provision for public input or oversight in it. That citizens is entirely out of the equation. The way, can you just respond to that on, it doesn't say who actually now is going to be heard on this, can you just respond to that on who would make up this?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Monica Anderson. I also want to thank you for sitting in on this working group. It was very valuable to have your help as well. I think that the directors and the folks in the working group talked about having sheep growers, cattlemen, farmers, those people who would be impacted, as well as other special interests. Generally, there are environmental groups or others who would participate in these task forces. But perhaps because agriculture, I believe Chuck Craig is here and Roy Ellicker are here, and since they would probably be recommending to the directors who would be appointed, perhaps they would like to acknowledge that on the record as well. Myself, I feel that there would certainly be a broad range of folks involved that would meet all of the public citizens' interests.
Finally, at the bottom.
Thank you.
Nearly invisible is a combination of general funds at $18.2 million and lottery funds at $20 million. General funds are used for other lottery funds are passed through the Department of Transportation at the rate of about $20 million for buying in to pay for light rail debt service.
Okay.
The following cannot be budget issues in the government.
Missing an action.
Madam Chair, representing the committee, I'm Roger Huffman from the Department of Agriculture, Animal Health and Education Division, and
in part because of the failure of the most recent gas tax
program, which is the Department of Ag, Chuck Craig was
would have provided an $238 million. But because there hasn't been an increase in snow
amendment, so I will kind of.
There's also no gas tax.
I was part of the working group that Representative Lee chaired.
As a result,
there was
budget is less than a 1%
representation from the Cattlemen Association, Farm Bureau, and the counties.
In order to live with
those various, I guess, my stakeholders purchases for those
$45.5 million
there
on bridge and highway
preservation. And it talks about 9 and 10, we develop and coordinate programs and activities to assist farmers, ranchers, and other landowners. I don't believe that we have any intent to have a closed meetings or council meetings, but we would have representation from the segment, you might say, at large, and then we would certainly meeting notices so that any particular individual certainly could attend and have their input. That would be our perspective on the
there are
essentially... Can I ask you, I don't see any numbers given here of how big this shelter will be.
Expected to cover the cost of the services that provide. In other words, she's supposed to...
Chairman Close, I don't know that we put a number on it, but
I... only expected to support themselves, but to provide revenue to the highway fund in order to compensate...
I would defer to Representative Lee if she, as chair of the group, had any particular idea. I guess if I hadn't seen a shot in the dark,
I'm here for the record, Cory Elker. I'm the coordinator for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I'm here to echo what kind of Lee's remarks and Roger Hopkins from the Department of Agriculture. And certainly, let me put this on record from the department. It's only our intention to be successful that these have to be involved in public, these meetings. And certainly ourselves and agriculture will make every effort, regardless of how many people end up serving as task force members, whether that's 10 or maybe even more than that, 15. But certainly, certainly the heart of this is not so much the task force itself, but the effort to gather the information and talk to the public about these issues.
We still have to be a field officer.
I'm sure. I'm not sure it might be as formal as a hearing, but certainly it will be. Public announcement to the various groups, perhaps the local paper, if we have one over in Eastern Oregon, for instance, making every effort to invite folks in and talk about these issues. So we can start to get a feel for that.
And that is no reflection on either the Department of Agriculture or the Department of Fish and Wildlife. McKinney, two agencies at random, and we've been jointly involved in the project. It becomes much more complex of one agency involved in the project. And quite frankly, I think either agency might be able to do this. For example, there is no reference here to how the appointments are made or split between the agencies, whether we got 12 people, we give 6 and 6. And it goes on to say that they serve at the pleasure of the directors, which means the directors can fire them. So does that mean that you can fire ODF&W's and ODF&W can fire Department of Agriculture? I'm not meaning to be ridiculous with this, but it does concern me. I see potential problems here down the line when we get two agencies involved in the purpose of this.
I guess to follow up, I'm wondering why in Section 2, why the work group in Section 2 in the original bill was held out.
Again, it's about 10% of change of the general fund, and it will have the effect of slowing the bus replacement schedule. So it's actually going to have to be in close to
Madam Chair, everyone felt that both of the agencies were well aware of the people who would participate, who need to participate, and there was concern that the list might not be inclusive enough. And that folks in the workplace, the Farm Bureau and some of the others are here, felt very comfortable with allowing the agency to make the selection because they know who the constituents are. This idea about serving at the pleasure of the director was something that Legislative Council inserted that we had not requested. Maybe something of that sort needs to be there, but that was not what the committee had discussed. We assumed that this work group would be continuing on through the process.
We can't afford it. We can't afford this staff.
In response to that, I'm not sure that I'm suggesting we go back and further amend proposal we have here. Of course, I'm the bill we have before us. I'm suggesting that this is something that always concerns me, and I guess in part in the process of making that suggestion, putting the two departments on notice that we sure don't want this type of thing to be happening. I think it would be helpful if the
within other funds in order to provide as much funding as possible for bridge and pavement preservation projects.
Thank you very much, Tom.
$45.5 million.
Thank you for the questions.
$41 million of
projects. So I'm going to close the public hearing for the
improvement program
and open a workshop for the environment
into a later volume.
I'd move the schedule amendment to House Bill 2049. I move House Bill 2049 as amended to the floor of the New Pastor.
I hesitate to do that since I'm having more
Moving on to central services, there's a reduction of four positions, fiscal coordinators, two positions involved in training and clerical positions. The other reductions, the rest of the reduction in the package is about half the package.
Motion carries and St. Jensen would like to create a session.
Finally, in highway planning, there was a reduction of $1 million, and it's within the professional services. accounting is there, and their positions involved with that.
Maybe a short bill we're going to deal with and then get into the land. We're going to open up public hearing on House Bill 2670 and call. Very patient.
Increase over 9901. It exists in relatively flat revenues with the exception of BMVC changes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. I am Chris Crane with the law firm of Miller Nash here on behalf of the Oregon State Bar, asking you to approve House Bill 2370. 2370simply corrects some, doesn't correct, it modifies some series references within certain ORS statutes and chapters, cleaning up some internal references, adding sections to where they should be so that when you turn to the sections in the ORS, you won't find a little note under them that says this section was added to this chapter, but to know series within the chapter, see the preface for the explanation. Glad to apply this for the explanation at this point. I'm really interested. Actually, I mean, those 18 volumes of the ORS are the legislature is the author of them. They're published every 2 years by legislative council, and it's quite an operation, and I encourage everybody to inquire into it at some point during their tenure. So this is the proper opportunity for a full discussion of publishing the ORS and why this bill is useful for that purpose. But I did draft it for that purpose when I was with legislative council last year. I talked to everybody that ever came into my office on a land use matter, and everybody's fine with it. It is merely a housekeeping bill, and I would ask your approval. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
I'm just wondering your motivation why you would want to sit down with Senator Frank.
It was interim. I mean, quite frankly, professional pride, mostly. You know, at Legislative Council, I spent 5 years in certain subject areas, and I started getting irritated with the way some things were organized, and all these little notes, you know, bills get passed in a hurry at the end of the session, you don't often have time to structure them the way. The preface for further explanation. I'd be glad to provide a further explanation at this point if anybody's really interested. Actually, I mean, those 18 volumes of the ORS are, the legislature is the author of them, and they're published every 2 years by legislative council, and it's quite an operation, and I encourage everybody to inquire into it at some point during their tenure. I don't know if this is the proper opportunity for a full discussion of publishing the ORS and why this bill is useful for that purpose, but I did draft it for that purpose when I was with legislative council last year. I talked to everybody that ever came into my office on a land use matter, and everybody's fine with it. It is merely a housekeeping bill, and I would ask your approval. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
I'm just wondering your motivation why you would want to sit down and spend your time doing this.
It was interim. I mean, quite frankly, professional pride, mostly. You know, at Legislative Council, I spent 5 years in certain subject areas, and I started getting irritated with the way some things were organized, and all these little notes. You know, bills get passed in a hurry at the end of session, and you don't often have time to structure them the way that you would like to when you have time to sit down and do it. So during the interim, you have time to actually sit down and do it, and I keep a little running tab of corrections that should be made, corrections that should be inserted. And when I had time, I would draft up a bill, and this is the second time I've done this. The bar sponsored this bill first time in 99, and then I did another one. The one in 99 cleaned up a couple of other chapters, and then I assumed as long as I was going to be at Legislative Council, I would do one of these every interim when, you know, because I had the time. You just don't have time during session. And it's professional pride. I like those chapters that I worked in to be as organized as they could be.
There's a question for Pam Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you're looking for a project for the next time, I would suggest the water statutes. It takes an index to get
through. You know, since I left Legislative Council and went into private practice, I've been doing some water law, and I agree with you.
Further questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
closing the public hearing on House Bill 2370, opening a work session on House Bill 2370. Madam Chair, it's been reported. I move House Bill 2370 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Kifori moves House Bill 2370 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Okay, hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Is excused.
Okay, let's go.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Is excused. Aye. I'm looking for Representative Jensen. Okay. Not here. Okay, motion carries. Representative Kifori, would you like to say
something? Somebody asked, I would love to. I can't hear this.
I think Representative Kifori needs to explain this to us in case there's out there.
My constituents went to the hard work of preparing this. I would be honored.
Thank you so much. Should we close the work session?
Yes, we will.
Well, you should.
Okay. Our last bill, I believe, is 2890. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2890 and call John Schoenberg. He's not back yet. Randy Tucker is next on the list. Okay, we should have a in here somewhere. Randy, why don't you come up and we'll have the staff review. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2890 requires the farm income standard used to determine whether dwelling is customarily provided in conjunction with farming to be adjusted to the current year dollars using the 1993 as the base year and using an annual adjustment factor based on the annual change in the prices received by the...
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 801.
Senator Gordy moves the dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 801. Is there discussion on the motion? Any non-objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 801 as amended to the two-way committee.
Thank you, Senator Gordon. Move Senate Bill 801 as amended by the committee. It's made on Ways and Means. Members, we don't have a fiscal yet, but we have been assured by Department of Justice that the similar task force has generated a significant more than $50,000 fiscal, so we want to get the bill down there as soon as possible so we can find the money to fund it. Can we get it together? Comment you want to make?
I did it before we sent it to Ways and Means, and I didn't know that it had to go to Ways and Means. But that is in part, Mr. Chair, because I wasn't involved with the drafting of this amendment. And I think that would be the nature of the comment that I make at this point, is that Senator Miller and myself and the Chair was involved in drafting this legislation after numerous meetings. And then I guess it was about 2 weeks ago we had a CAP public hearing, and at that meeting I expressly indicated that I looked forward to, and then my office and Senator Miller's office went to work on arranging testimonies that for our hearing, which was scheduled for Wednesday. We're going to go forward with that hearing. We have a U.S. Senator. We actually had two U.S. Senators that were going to be here. And I think it's just very unfortunate that we are now moving the bill forward in the legislative process without a public hearing. And effectively, the public was denied an opportunity to come and express themselves on this issue. And I think it is really unfortunate when that happens. And I understand and I appreciate the Chair's assistance in terms of bringing these bills and working on these bills and taking an interest in this issue. But I do think that it is unfortunate when we let the public out of the process. I think this is the circumstances where I found out about this amendment this morning. I read it around 11. I didn't know it had to go to Ways and Means because I wasn't involved in the drafting of the amendment. And just, I guess, register my objection in that vein is that I think we have two huge responsibilities here. But first is to allow the public in to testify on bills. And I can tell you Wednesday, we have a number of groups, of citizen groups, of folks in industry, and we'll do a public hearing, but unfortunately it won't be the Senate Business and Labor and Economic Development Committee, because we'll have to do our own public hearing to have a good hearing of that legislation.
I will echo the objection.
Okay, is that an objection to the motion or objection to what we're doing?
Mr. Chair,
I think the comment by Senator Decker that has been joined in by Senator Corcoran is more than just a general expression. I think it's a very serious concern and complaint about process. And we need to do it. We need to own that. And I just want to say that I join you in the concern that you've expressed, and would hope that as our committee work goes forward, that we don't do this again.
Noted. Any objections to the motion to turn the bill to Ways and Means? The amendment so ordered. And we don't need to carry it. We'll now go to House Bill 3791. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3791.
Mr. Chairman, 3791 gives the Department of Transportation authority to set the minimum amount that a dealer can charge for the paperwork and other work involved in transferring a title. The minimum amount they can accept would be $50. The second thing the bill does is it increases the dealer's annual bond from the current $25,000 to $30,000, and then raises it an additional $5,000 a year over the next 3 years. And finally, it places the $20,000 limit on the claims against that bond when the claimant is not a retail customer.
Go ahead, Darrell. So you must have signed up on our balance sheet yet. So you must really testify on 3791.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Darrell Fuller. I represent the Oregon Auto Dealers Association, and I assure you this will be the dullest bill that you hear today. House Bill 3791 does three things relating to auto dealers. First, it increases the bond required to be an auto dealer. The bond maintained a steady $15,000 from the 1960s to the 1990s. Last session, we changed it from $15,000 to $20,000 last year, from $20,000 to $25,000 in September this year. The bill continues to increase the bond that dealers have to have in $5,000 increments until we reach $40,000 total. Second thing the bill does is it reserves bonding amounts over $20,000 to consumers only. What we learned 2 years ago is that bonds which are intended to be for consumer protection, that only about 15% of it, so 20% of the bond, was actually being paid out to consumers when the dealership failed. The other 80 to 85% of the bond was going to other dealers and financial institutions who staked their claims earlier than consumers when the dealership failed. So by reserving the bonding amount over $20,000 to consumers only, we are in effect quadrupling the consumer protection in this bill by increasing the bond to $40,000 and reserving half of it to consumers only. Finally, the third thing the bill does is take an existing $35 fee, which is in Department of Justice advertising rules, moves that administrative fee to Department of Justice statutes regulating auto dealers' titling and registration of vehicles that are sold to consumers, and it modestly increases the fee that we can charge consumers from $35 to $50. Be happy to answer any questions.
Darrell, on that last point, you said it moves it to the Department of Justice?
No, I'm sorry, it moves it from the Department of Justice. It's currently an advertising rule under the Department of Justice. This moves it over to the Department of Transportation in their Business Regulation Division, where they do titling and registration. And it changes it from an administrative rule to the Department of Justice to statute at ODOT.
And this amendment, it doesn't cap the fee, it just says it cannot be less than $50?
The current fee is $35. It says that essentially that the fee will now be $50, and that the Department of Justice cannot reduce the fee by rule less than $50. Dealers don't have to charge the fee. and they don't have to charge $50. It essentially dealers have the option of charging a fee up to $50. And they have an option now of charging a fee up to $35. This would allow the Department of Justice's cost increase to go above the $50, but it wouldn't allow the Department of Justice, it wouldn't allow the Department of Transportation to establish a fee below the $50. Yeah, it's a $15 increase in the fee. The fee has never been increased since it was instituted.
And this is the fee that consumers pay?
Yeah, consumers pay for in exchange for the auto dealers completing the title and registration work.
So if I go to one of your dealers and buy an automobile, and they do the title and registration work, they charge me today $35 to do that?
They may charge you up to $35. They're not required to. And the consumer can opt to make paperwork themselves or argue that cars are a negotiated price item. So consumers can argue that they don't want to pay the $35 if they don't want to pay it. It's simply a customer service fee. It's not much different than the fee that other stakeholders get, whether they're selling a snow park permit or a fishing license. The difference between those and with auto dealers is that the state gives the cut to the retailer as part of a licensing fee. In this case, we don't get that guaranteed cut. The state allows us to charge a fee up to $50 or up to $35 if we choose to charge it. We're not required to charge the fee, and some dealers don't. But this simply is an effort at recouping our costs. For my dealers, for example, when you're a large volume dealer, you have a title clerk in-house whose job is to do nothing but fill out the title and registration work on behalf of consumers. That's their entire job. So essentially, we have an employee on staff who does nothing but collect taxes on behalf of the state of Oregon and fill out paperwork on behalf of consumers. That $35 fee that we're charging is an attempt to recoup the cost for the benefit the state receives and the fact that we collect an enormous amount of money on their behalf.
And we appreciate it. Thanks, Kelly, by the way.
And we think it would be a good idea, frankly, if you increase the title and registration fees. We think they're too low.
We'll have to ask Senator George about that one. Thank you very much.
It means in the bill.
And those last comments you've taken from the record, Mr. King.
Okay. I'm still struggling with the language, but I think I understand now what it says. Monty, do you want to lay this on testimony over here, and I'm still making sure that we're doing what you say, Mr. King?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Monty King. I represent the Oregon Independent Auto Dealers Association, which is the independent, non-franchise people. The costs of selling a car don't just include the title and registration, making out that paperwork. You have to keep the records for 5 years on the odometer. You need to keep the records for DMV for 3 years. You've got to store this stuff. You know, some of these dealers have huge rooms full of files. You have to buy the forms. You have to pay for the employees. You've got to pay for the employees to drive over to DMV to put the paperwork in. And then when you get back, you got to sometimes send stuff out, notices out. We recommend to all of our dealers they do a Carfax on every car when they're selling it. That's $10. Right? If we get into title and registration, electronic stuff in the future, you're talking about maybe $15 to $17 to do electronic title transfer paid by the dealer. So there are huge amounts of costs that dealers do to take care of the process for the customer and the state. And that's what this fee is. As we said, it's not mandatory. We don't have to charge it. They don't have to pay it. They don't want to. We would appreciate it being raised because it should have been raised a while back. I've been working on this issue for 2 years. And I think everybody's agreeing it. This is the way it ought to be done. And we've got the bond increase, and it's going up step by step. That's going to protect my small dealers, my small businessmen. So if there's any real problem with the bonding process, we can maybe catch that halfway through. If I got 500 small dealers going out of business because the bond gets too high, that's going to create a lot of havoc in my industry. That's why you have the 4-step $5,000 increases so we can see this thing happen instead of whacking it all at one time. Florida did a study on their bond. 85% of their bond is going to business, show this consumer only over $20,000 level. That's going to be terrific for the consumer. Terrific. So we support the bill. We think it's good for the public. We think it's good for the state. We think it's good for the dealers. It's win-win-win.
Monty, you said four steps, but I see three.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the first step was already passed in 1999. It goes into effect September 1st, 2001. Right? But, and then we've added three more steps on there, going from 25 to 50. So right now it's 20. Right now it's 20, already going to 25, but the 25 that already had been voted on and passed, we're now going to convert that into consumer-only bond level. It was going to be dealer-to-dealer, business-to-business, and consumer. So we're reserving 5,000 already passed 2 years ago just for consumers.
Daryl and Monty, you said that the fee is optional.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
How many consumers know that?
Mr. Chairman, we're required to. We cannot represent the fee as a government fee or as a required fee. Department of Justice, as part of the advertising rule, specifically states that we cannot represent the fee as a required fee.
So they're talking translation also.
Mr. Chairman, the Attorney General's office, while eliminating the fee portion of the advertising rules because it would be in statute, has told us that they will continue to have the advertising rule, which would prohibit us from indicating that the fee is anything other than an optional fee. So the requirements that go around administering the fee will not change.
Okay.
And we have agreement from the Department of Justice and the Department of Transportation in moving the fee over.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen. Okay, the public hearing on House Bill 8791. Anyone want to raise the fee? I'll get a little question here. That's the income for
good folks.
That's what happened.
I know.
Okay. Huh? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so. What's that? House 3791.
Mr. Chair.
What's in your question?
Move 3791 is for the pass.
In the court, move House Bill 3791 to the floor of the D-Pass recommendation. Any further discussion?
George, the chair, good afternoon.
Okay. In the court, we'll carry it. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3791. Any discussion?
I think Senator Deck is going to do this, but I was asked by Senator Miller to do this. There's no stop for reconsideration vote on Senate Bill 801.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I just looked up the proper motion to do the same thing, so I'm going to support the motion that's coming.
There's a notice of a cancel.
Support it.
Has it been moved?
Yeah,
I move.
You have to serve notice.
I serve notice of possible reconsideration, having voted on the prevailing side.
Okay, show notice for the record. We will close the Committee on Business, Labor, and Economic Development. And
so, do you, what does that do now?